Hello, everyone. Welcome to another podcast of Building Buffalo. I'm Newell Nussbaumer. I'm here with Stuart Green from Bray Miller Market in downtown Buffalo and Paul Simonelli from Simonelli Real Estate Corp. Hey, guys.
Morning.
Morning.
How is everybody doing today?
I've done better.
I know you have, Stuart. The reason that we're actually here chatting is because, you know, there's some sad news for downtown Buffalo. And as many people know by now, I would imagine, it's all about the closing of Bray Miller Market, which I still can't believe. And I can't believe, and I know you guys can't believe that either.
Well, it's certainly not what we intended to do.
No, it's not, definitely.
Yeah, but we've been talking about how Bray Miller, the direction of Bray Miller really is, it's a much larger topic than just the closing of a beloved market in downtown Buffalo. Stuart, you've been in business with Bray Miller for, I mean, I know Bray Miller predates you, but you've been in business with Bray Miller for how long?
Bray Miller Market is actually 83 years old, started in Hamburg in 1941. I've owned it for 9 years now.
Yeah. And can you tell us a little bit about just going back, really what brought you to downtown Buffalo?
Well, it was interesting. We've done very well at the Hamburg store for quite a few years. And there was an opportunity primarily on the wholesale side with the restaurant environment within the city of Buffalo. It would seem to be a little underserved at the time, and we've got our niche customers, so it made an awful lot of sense. So I started looking at some locations within the city, and then I was approached to work on this 201 project with Paul and his people, and former mayor Byron Brown actually had me in his office and asked me if I would consider it. He and Darius Prigent came out to my store one day, stood in the middle of it, looked around and said, wouldn't this be awesome if we could bring this to the people of downtown Buffalo, because they've been asking for this for a long time. And so the environment made sense. It seemed like there was some growth going on within the city of Buffalo, and we thought we had the timing right. This was, of course, all pre-pandemic, and we saw a lot of good things going on within the city. Made an awful lot of sense to me at the time.
And you didn't just go like, hey, yeah, this sounds fantastic, let's open up a market.
It was not my brainchild to be at 201 Ellicott Street. Yeah, we were interested in the city. We didn't know exactly where because of the concentration of people and the concentration of customers and the potential that we had. And it appeared with the niche that we have on the wholesale side that it made some sense to do that as well.
Yeah, but you really conducted your own studies.
Yeah, as well as Simonelli had done some of their own studies and presented some of that information to me. I guess I found out a little bit later that there was an RFP put out and everyone else turned it down, but except for me. But
it's the old saying, Stuart, everyone else stepped back and you were, except for you,
the last guy standing.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's not that you step forward, it's everyone else stepped back.
But again, I was interested in the city. It made sense. The 201 location, because of the incentives that were presented to me, made it make some sense because it was a win-win for both of us. I got a brand new building that's spectacular versus renovating an old building or trying to make something else work as an incentive versus the alternative. And then the city got what they wanted because there were a lot of people without access to food downtown of all economic backgrounds. And so we stepped in and filled that spot.
And we have to remember that this was a parking lot.
It was a city-owned parking lot, absolutely. And the it'd be interesting to look back and see if it was a revenue generating issue as well as clearly we're not paying any property taxes or any sort of taxes for being at that location.
And Paul, this development came, it wasn't just Bray Miller. Can you talk a little bit about like the bigger picture for the development on that parcel?
Yeah, we responded to an RFP that the city put out, and we were going to do market rate housing. It was going to be a mixed use project. It was going to have structured parking, market rate housing, office, and some retail. And when the office market softened a little, and the thing that really, one of the reasons why we pivoted, a couple of reasons. Number one, on the office side, is that when Doug Jamal, who did a great job, bought Seneca One for pennies on the dollar, you know, that was a concern because he's obviously has to fill 1.2 million square feet of office. So that kind of was a little bit of a disruptor for the market. And it ended up to be a good thing. Doug's a good guy and he's done a lot of great things for Buffalo. So it's not really a knock on him. He's a developer and he's good at it. So we took a hard look at it. The other thing is two of our anchor tenants could not wait time-wise and they had to make a decision and move on with their space. So the timing and also the situation with Mr. Jamal buying Seneca One, that's why we pivoted to say, you know what? We really shouldn't be doing office now because we didn't lose our tenants. Actually, one of them was Canon, who then ended up coming downtown and into our building. And we thank them for that. They came in from Grand Island. And the other tenant actually stayed where they were. So we didn't lose tenants out of downtown. We actually still brought one in. And the other one still stayed, which is a good thing. But we had to pivot. And one of the things that I think it started with between the mayor and the county executive about affordable housing for downtown. And we thought, you know what? There isn't a project downtown lately that it's a new affordable housing development. So we thought that it was a great opportunity to do that. We did not cheapen the design by any means because I said that everyone, we're still going to build it like it's a market rate apartment development, but we're just going to, fill it full of affordable housing. And that's why we are where we are. And then we still wanted to do the food retail spot because one of the things we kept hearing is there's a food desert in that part of the city. So we tried to go out and get national food retailers and couldn't get any traction anymore. Tops initially committed to it and then for a lot of different reasons decided not to do it. And lo and behold, Stuart came up. And I thought, when Stuart started to show some strong interest in it, I said, this guy checks every box because he's a local business. He is, it's good to have, he's kind of a smaller business, but he really wanted to do something that was more community oriented. He had the community is in the forefront of why he wanted to do this. Obviously, economically and financially, it had to make sense. But you wouldn't have got that with a national food retailer. It would have been another project. This is not just another project to Stuart. This is something that he put a lot of time, sweat equity, and hard equity into this project.
Yeah, let's go back for a second and talk about the pandemic again. Obviously, when you had signed off on this, Stuart, the pandemic wasn't around. Things changed pretty quickly. Can you tell us a little bit about, kind of what went through your mind when all of this was happening and what was happening with the actual location in the market?
Well, the difficulties from our perspective, just like everyone else, is nobody knew what to expect. Pandemic hits, we're under construction. It's not like we had any chance to really turn back at that point. We're committed. And didn't know what was going to happen. And I've been reflecting on that quite a bit lately because initially it was, quarantine for a week. Then it was quarantine for another week. And then it was a month. And then it was, you had no idea what was coming and how catastrophic this whole thing was going to be. So to be able to second guess it and react, it would have been very difficult. The good news was, for a small local market like ourselves, the Hamburg store thrived during that period. It was the best economic period for the Hamburg store. Wow. By a long shot, because people stayed out of big stores and they went to little stores and they supported local little guys. And my staff, I had half of the staff because my younger kids, their parents wouldn't let them come to work, that my older people were afraid of getting sick. So my staff was cut in half. And our business thrived during that period. So we're seeing this and it's like, hey, this isn't so bad. You know, the city store, you know, when we finally get this thing open, this could be a benefit to us as well, because we are the little guy and people seem to be embracing the little guys versus the national large retailers. So again, we weren't freaking out. We opened 6 months later. It cost us more than we thought. And we opened the door and it was crickets. It was really, really hard, and we stuck with it, and we invested more money, personal monies, and a lot. But we knew at that point we're in trouble.
Yeah, because you are privately owned.
Yes, 100%. And again, I have no partners other than Paul in a small percentage in the real estate, but as far as the operating company, it's just me, and it's been a struggle. We went to the city, asked them for some help. They said, we think there could be something out there. We want to help you. We want to do something for you. And that incentive took 21 months to receive. We've been open for 3 years.
Yep.
So we got dragged through broken glass through the common council. That was horrible, what happened to me in that arena. I mean, it was really, really hard to stay focused and stay positive and look forward when it took 21 months of a lot of effort and disappointment to get to that point. And of course, during those 21 months, a lot of things changed as well, from where we thought we were and where we'd be, what the future could hold. So again, when we applied for that grant money, to the time that we received it, nobody anticipated that either.
Yeah. And I mean, let's talk about the business, the corporate situation in downtown Buffalo. I mean, people aren't going to work like they were before the pandemic. Is that, Paul, you're down there every day. What are you seeing?
Well, the numbers bear out the fact there's 20,000 less people in downtown Buffalo than there was before the pandemic, we're fortunate. Our office buildings are doing fairly well. I think we took the opportunity to play offense and not defense, meaning that we invested a lot of capital into our two primary holdings, which are Lafayette Court Building and our corporate headquarters at Fountain Plaza. And I think it's bared, because of that, we've enjoyed some success in leasing space there. And, but I just think the downtown retailers, I know that there's a lot of them, most of them are struggling, and most of them are very small businesses. And I just think that we have to move quicker, and downtown has to evolve like other mid-sized cities in a post-COVID world where remote work is starting to trend back the other way. I don't know if it's ever going to go back to where it was, but you know, it's the old, you know, things have a tendency to moderate, and I think it's starting to moderate now.
Is the city doing enough to pivot post-COVID?
Conceptually, yes. Execution-wise, no. I mean, there's a playbook out there. It just has to happen faster and quicker, and we need to get going. And I think a couple of areas that you really have to do is, one of the concerns I always had about Buffalo is we have a tendency not to create neighborhoods and density within our developments. They're kind of scattershot all over the place. And that does not bode well for critical mass of pedestrian traffic, which supports retail.
How do you fix that?
Well, part of the challenge we had is, I mean, Doug Jamal had a great plan for Ellicott Street, the Simon Electric and everything else around it. The other thing that's the other dynamic here that not a lot of people talk about, but nationally, real estate's been in a recession, except for maybe a couple of verticals, but primarily across the board because of high interest rates and high construction costs. Our industry has been in recession probably going into 3 years now. And because of that, a lot of Douglas will tell you that a lot of his projects have been put on hold. There's not a lot of liquidity in the market. What does that mean? Banks aren't lending. So everyone's just sitting back. Now, we don't expect construction prices to go down. We hopefully, they're starting to level off, but interest rates are still high. and banks were not lending. So it caused, that's another issue that when we're talking to Stuart about it, we're looking big picture and say, Stuart, the good news is we're the first of a lot of development up and down Ellicott. And so you're getting in a little early. Again, didn't know COVID was going to hit. But, you know, the trend line is pointing up. And then COVID hits. Then we have the banking situation. And you had the perfect storm.
Yeah.
And but notwithstanding all that, you still need to create more neighborhoods within downtowns, like a lot of other cities do. And we have the perfect example of this is Larkinville. Larkinville is a neighborhood. It's not a series of buildings. It's a neighborhood.
Yeah. There's a plan.
It's a plan. Yeah. And it's, you know, the Zemsky family doesn't, you know, they don't do like a few buildings here, then go a half a mile down the street because there's another building they want. They stuck to a plan. They create a critical mass. It's creating a momentum. They have a strong epicenter there, and they've been be able to build off it. Well, there's a good case study of we have to do more of that, even within downtown.
And now it's a great mix of both retail,
right,
restaurants, people living in Larkinville. It's really exciting, and it's there's a central sort of piazza approach to it.
Well, that's
too.
The epicenter part. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
And I also think that, there's been a ton of studies shows that 24/7 downtowns are, you know, everyone wins. When you have a 9-to-5 downtown, which we had before, and I think the mayor's done a good job of getting housing downtown and started with Masiello administration and carried through to the Brown administration. But we needed to do it in more of a concentrated effort to, in this whole thing, what really bothers me, and ironically, somebody who's owned a parking company for over two decades, is there was always a too much emphasis on vehicular traffic. Well, we need more parking. We need this. No, you don't. What you need are people walking around downtown. You need a bike friendly, pedestrian friendly, mass transit friendly, and then vehicular friendly. Not the other way around.
Exactly.
And there's a lot of people that think you got to start with, you need more parking and more. The thought process is, well, you know, you got to have parking next to your buildings. Well, if you think about the logic of that, if you do that, that means no one's walking around. That's a suburban mentality. That's what you do in suburban office parks. That's what you do in suburban retail environments. In urban retail environments, you create a critical mass and people walk everywhere.
Right. And transportation is a big thing too.
And it's pretty simple.
Yeah. Stuart, you and I talk often. And a lot of times when we talk, you always mention that, oh, I just landed another restaurant account. I believe that the restaurant accounts were super happy with what you were offering and you were growing that side of it, right?
Yes. Because again, we do things a little bit differently. We don't have a lot of rules. As I tell all of my employees, if we can do it, the answer is yes. And I think the service that we provide our restaurant customers is unparalleled.
Yeah. So what is going to happen? How many clients do you have at this point and what are they going to do now?
Well, Noel, I'm glad you asked because actually we've been, Braemiller Market has been doing business in the city for 50 plus years, long before I owned the operation. Restaurant customers from the Hamburg store is not foreign to us. We've done that for a long, long time. So shifting gears and taking that and continuing that and continuing to grow it and service all of those customers is not a problem at all. But a lot of people don't realize, and I mentioned this to Paul recently, I mean, it's a three-legged stool. We operate a kitchen, which is like its own restaurant for our prepared foods and our deli. We have the retail side and the wholesale side. And when everybody's doing the right thing and communicating, it runs as one business that's very efficient with very little waste. If you run them as three separate businesses, it doesn't work very well. We lose our efficiencies. So, but to transfer that business to the Hamburg store and continuing to grow it like we have, not a problem.
Yeah. So, Braemiller, as of late, was actually late, on an $8,000 payment to the city of Buffalo, the tax department. How did that come about, and what is the resolution to that?
Yeah, just very quickly, what happened with that is this tax pilot was explained to me as, the term was, Stuart, this is more of an escrow type of account. We have to collect this amount of tax during this whole period of the pilot. And what we could do and has been done is we could potentially move those payments to a point where you're profitable. And there were discussions within the city about being able to do that. The city didn't react quickly enough. And the ECIDA is pulling the trigger on me to get all of the money back retro to day one. So something needed to be done. So yes, yours truly took his own money, paid the ECIDA, which they are the messenger. The money is property tax money to the city of Buffalo. I walked that check over to the city of Buffalo and paid them. So yes, all the taxes are currently paid.
Paul, what is that? What kind of message does that send? Just the way this is all, I mean, you've been going through a lot of these issues. Stuart's laughing. Like, how is this stuff handled, and how could it be handled better? Obviously, yes, it'd be great in a perfect world if the money hadn't been owed, if it had been paid. But like, you're a small business. And it seems that, like, you're...
Well, let me cut in ahead of Paul real quick here. Number one, as I said earlier, don't forget, this was a city-owned property of a parking lot that was probably a revenue loser for the city, as well as generated no tax payments. So when you talk about a tax incentive, the incentive was to the city of Buffalo to collect money from me in some form or fashion, because they were collecting nothing prior to. For the incentive part, yeah, I mean, it was, to me, from my perspective, it was an incentive to the city to collect something versus nothing.
Right. Yeah. Paul?
Yes. Well, I think the frustrating part was, you know, there's been a lot of money thrown around the small businesses in over the last few years. And I don't know why it seems like Stuart, for some reason, has got a bullseye on his back. And I can't understand why, because he is a small business and he is somebody who was very passionate about trying to transform that, you know, help transform downtown. And it's just a little frustrating to see, you know, some of the rhetoric out there. Oh, we should have never gave him the money in the first place. Whatever. I mean, first of all, it's small business. So do we say that with every time we give money to small business? And, you know, you're taking a risk. And small businesses usually are very community oriented. That's the good news. The bad news is they don't have the financial wherewithal. A lot of times the big businesses do, but they look at their business. And I always look at it and say, I like having dealing with a lot of small business, because you deal with the owners, you know, they're passionate about what they do. There's not a lot of bureaucracy dealing with them. I mean, it's nice to be able to deal with the decision maker and the owner. And that's what it was with Stuart. And that's why we're able to get this deal done.
Yeah.
But now it seems like he's almost being penalized for being a small business.
Yeah.
In some ways.
So we're not only talking about the customers that are no longer going to have a place in downtown Buffalo to shop, but employees. That's got to hurt.
Yes, it does. I'm sorry. These people need jobs. And I have 36 employees. And yes, some of them are high school kids, college kids. But there are a lot of people that are providers to their families. And it hurts me very much.
Yeah. And as we're talking right now, this podcast at this moment, they don't even know. Nobody really knows exactly what's happening. It's some people might be talking, but this podcast is happening before the official announcement. So it's definitely got to be tough for everybody. Yeah. Stuart, is there anything that you can think of? Like, could anything have been different? Like, was there kind of like something that should have happened, you should have done, the city should have done? Was there kind of like a couple, one or two things that basically in hindsight, thinking back, going like, okay, you know what? We should have done that. We didn't. And here we are today.
Well, Newell, I guess my whole life, I'm 63 years old. I've learned a few things in my life. And one thing that I've learned is you don't want to end up with any regrets ever. And I have some from my younger days.
we all do.
But today, I got to say that in hindsight, I don't see where we screwed it up. We did the best we could with what we had. The effort that I've put in, my staff has put in, my family has put in, has been tremendous. And I'm not thinking that we should have done something different or we missed something. There was just so many things that happened beyond our control. I really don't have any regrets. I mean, yeah, you know, somebody asked me, one of the media outlets asked me the other day, well, knowing what you know now, would you do it again? Well, knowing what I know now, of course I wouldn't, because look what I have to do today. Nobody wants to do that. The idea was, we've got one store that runs really great. Wouldn't it be nice to have two? That's how we plowed into this thing. And it made sense at the time. Everything changed. Again, you know, the first whammy was the pandemic. The second one was, you know, the light at the end of the tunnel was, don't worry, you know, we lost all these commuters downtown, but we're going to replace them with residents. And from my perspective, yeah, that makes sense, because again, residents are going to eat three times a day. Commuters might eat once. That was a win for me. Well, that hasn't happened either. And could we have gotten out at the, when we realized what the damage was done originally by the pandemic? Probably. But again, that light at the end of the tunnel of, we're going to replace this with residents, was why we got to this point. And that hasn't happened either.
This is a question for both of you. Let's talk about the future of the space. What happens?
I can't retain it. I don't have the ability to retain it. It's too expensive for me. So I have to let it go. I think we're free falling right now because I don't know exactly what's going to happen. You know, the bank is the primary stakeholder in it. They've got their options, I guess. And it's a beautiful building. And we have survived. There was another grocery store not too far away that was complaining about security and theft and what was going on at their store, even though they had security in their store and everything else, and it's currently closed. I told the mayor, if I need to have security in my building, we're closing immediately. And the city has done a decent job to help us maintain our business that way. But it's a spectacular building. It's super efficient. It's super nice. I love it. I'd love to be able to pick it up and move it to Hamburg, but it's a little too heavy. So what'll happen to it in the future? It's beyond my control. I'll let Paul take it from there.
Yeah, that's really up to the mortgage holder, and it's Evans Bank. And I have to really give Dave Naska and Evans Bank kudos, because I remember sitting down with Dave, and Dave really, again, a very community-oriented guy and bank, made a bet with us and Stuart on it. But again, they're regulated. They got to do what they got to do. It's not Dave Naska's money. It's the shareholder's money. So, and again, they're regulated. So they have to go through a process. So hopefully we'll be able to work with them on it too, because I have skin in the game, literally and figuratively here. It's going to be a very collaborative effort. We want to do something that's still accretive to downtown in that area. You know, in the community. So we'll have to just figure that out.
Stuart, throughout the course of Bray Miller's existence in downtown Buffalo, there was incremental growth throughout, right?
Well, we started at zero. and we are currently just a little bit behind what the Hamburg store took 83 years to accumulate. But it's just not enough. The revenue that we do need to generate to keep it in existence would have been twice of what we're doing today. I mean, it's It's a beautiful building, and it's very, very nice, and it's super efficient, but it's a big nut to crack, and we're not there.
Yeah, but it hopefully that does bode well for the space. You never know if another entity could possibly take it over and continue to have services in downtown Buffalo, too.
That's the sad part of it about it, because as I've had to explain to a couple of people, there's two values of that business. One is the real estate and the property and all that kind of stuff. And then the other thing should be it's customer revenue generating, the operating company. And that operating company should be worth something. The sad part for me is it's not, because I can't maintain it. But those customers that we've earned and worked very hard to attract and retain now have to do something else.
That's right.
Yeah. You know, I think just want to make up another topic. I mean, if you look a lot, and some of your critics, Stuart, have said, oh, he's got, I don't know about the pricing, because I you and I have talked about that from day one. You were going to price things accordingly to what you thought made sense for that neighborhood. And then they talked about product mix. And I remember Stuart being the entrepreneurial guy that he is, especially because he's betting with his own money, not shareholders, not private equity.
Not grant money.
And not grant money. It's Stuart Green's money.
I have more in it than anybody by a long shot.
And you can't, and especially when it's small business, and I always just call this thing emotional capital too. So he has a lot of emotional capital into it too. But some people say, well, you know, it wasn't the right product mix. And I remember Stuart saying, you know, we're going to start off with this, but he's a hands-on guy. And he said, if it's not the right product mix, we'll change it. And he did. And he continues to do it. It's an iterative or evolutionary process, because especially coming into a little bit different environment than we traditionally used to it in Hamburg.
A little bit, a lot different.
Yeah, I know, a lot different. Yeah. But you knew you've been there for, you said, 80 some years. And, you know, now you're coming into an urban environment. It's a very eclectic area you have, the East Side neighborhood, you have downtown, you have office workers. So it's a mix. So it's not easy to, and again, I'm not a food retailer or know anything about retail, but you'd think it's not easy to figure out what's the right product mix to have. So you just got to, you know, be able to be nimble, which Stuart was. And he said that from day one, you know, it's not going to be perfect in the beginning. We just got to keep working at it, figure out what's working, and more importantly, figure out what's not working in terms of what he could sell. So been trying to do that.
Yeah. Stuart, you, as we wrap this up, one of the things that really struck me about you and Bray Miller in downtown Buffalo is that there was not one time that I stopped in there where you weren't there, or you weren't in the parking lot loading something or checking out the shelves or talking to your employees or talking to the customers. Like, you were there all the time.
Or saw me on the street unloading something.
Exactly. Oh, yeah. Buzzing around town.
Driving the truck.
And yeah, like there goes Bray Miller. There goes Stuart. Like, I mean, so you were about as hands-on as I think that anybody ever possibly could have been.
To some people's chagrin, I have worked 360-plus days for the last 9 years of my life. And when I'm talking about 360-plus days, I'm not talking about 10, 15 minutes, 2 hours, 4 hours, 8 hours. My average day is 12 hours a day. And that's the way that I've been rolling for the last 9 years. And I'm a hands-on guy. I'm involved in everything that goes on. I am in both stores every day. My Hamburg customers say that they miss me. But that's the way that I am. And it's full gas all the time. I've got one speed, and I've done everything I can. When we talk about regrets, I mean, that's the thing. I'm in the stores. I'm in both stores. I do miss my customers from time to time. I do drive the truck. I clean the windows. I change the oil on my trucks. They call me MacGyver around there. I'm involved in ordering products, with vendor relationships, the financial side of the whole thing, the relationships with the bank. It's a small business, and that's what you have to do.
Yeah. Anything else you guys want to mention before we do officially wrap this up?
No, I just want to continue to say that downtown is at an inflection point. It really has to move quickly in a very focused approach to evolve in transform.
Yeah.
And they, because, you know, the old saying is you only coast in one direction. And so I just think we got to be quicker at what we're doing.
I remember when Taylor's closed in downtown Buffalo, and that sent a message that retail.
Well, people say that, but the product mix at Taylor was not.
I understand that, but guess what? Like at the end of the day, the people that don't know any difference say they look at it and they say retail is not viable in downtown Buffalo, and a lot of people talked about that for a long, long time. What is this message going to say that that Bray Miller did not make it?
Well, one of the reasons why it wasn't viable is because back then downtown was a 9-to-5 downtown, and retailers do not work unless you have so much office. And it's and the only type of retail that works, Newell's, what they call amenity retail, which is just there to support office workers. And a lot of times, maybe those guys can make a go of it. But to really have a vibrant downtown, it doesn't work in 9-to-5 downtowns. You need to have residential. You need to have more entertainment. You need to have, we need to have, you know, and I've talked to the governor about this, is Canalside has got to up its game. Unfortunately, or the state has been investing more in the outer harbor, I think, than the inner harbor. But the problem I have with that is the Canalside is more creative to the tax base in downtown, where the outer harbor is not. It's does nothing for downtown. And let's be clear, downtown drives a ton of tax revenue for the city of Buffalo. If you don't have a healthy urban core, you don't have a healthy city. And there's no way around that. And how do you do that? You got to create the want to be there factor. Mm-hmm. And Canalside has got to be more of a part of that.
Yeah. Okay. Well, as I said earlier, it's a sad day for Buffalo. But you know what? Buffalo always seems to bounce back. So let's keep Buffalo rising. And thanks again for being part of this podcast, guys.
Thank you. Noel. Right. Thank you.